We're told by Worldation the cast of the TV series MASH would regularly complain about this thing or the other, various script issues, or just general prima donna whining. Whenever this would happen, the writers would all of a sudden decide to film a cold weather scene. Why a cold weather scene? Because it forced the actors to get into heavy winter weather clothes while they were filming in the middle of 90-degree hot Malibu. Once the actors caught on to what was going on, they quickly stopped complaining. Do you remember the episode of MASH they called Dear Sis, the 15th episode of Season 7, an episode written and directed by Alan Alda? It's Christmas time in Korea, and everybody's depressed, especially Father Mulcahy, who is concerned that he isn't making a difference to anyone. Father Mulcahy is writing a letter home to his sister, and he's bemoaning his relative lack of usefulness. Hawkeye, BJ, Margaret, and Potter celebrate Christmas in Potter's office. Potter has a stiff upper lip, but his three younger friends are miserable. Christmas presents are dispensed by Captain Santa Honeycutt, and Winchester is surprised to learn that there's one for him, his old childhood toboggan hat, which makes Winchester's eyes tear up with nostalgia. There's also a present for Father Mulcahy. Hawkeye leads everyone in a toast to Mulcahy, thanking him for his simple decency and kindness. He also has everyone sing, Dona Nobis Pacem, give us peace. It starts to snow, making the 4077th almost look pretty. Unfortunately, wounded arrive, breaking up the festive mood. The final shot, featuring Father Mulcahy moving along briskly in the snowy darkness, is, as we're reminded by the Monster MASH wiki, beautifully composed thanks to the keen eye of director Alan Alda. There were a number of winter episodes of MASH. Santas, but no snowmen. Maybe because they were shooting their scenes in Malibu and not in South Korea. Bob Eckstein tells us in The Snowman Goes to War in his new book, the snowman has fought in almost every war in which there were troops and snow on the ground. When the United States went to war for the first time in nearly two decades, on January 16, 1991, there was widespread support and excitement across the country. Patriots altered holiday decorations. In Massachusetts, a snowman sported marine fatigues, and in Bowling Green, Ohio, a snowman got to drive a snow tank. Bob shows us photos from 1910 and 1916 featuring German soldiers posed with handmade snowmen, with other images from the Russo-Japanese War and also World War II. These are just some of the hundreds of photographs and illustrations from the newly released book titled The Illustrated History of the Snowman by Bob Eckstein. Bob Eckstein is a New York Times best-selling author of Footnotes from the World's Greatest Bookstores. He is an award-winning illustrator and much-loved New Yorker cartoonist. He divides his time between New York City and northeastern Pennsylvania. Bob Eckstein stopped in at the WVIA studios to share the results of his curiosity about snowmen.
This book, to me, is the most beautiful book I have ever worked on. It is amazing because of the photographs. I have over 200 to 300 photographs in here. It includes my snowman collection, which is over 800 items. But there's photographs from around the world, some by me, some by other people, some by famous photographers. And the book is just beautiful to look at. You only have to read the story about the snowman to enjoy it because it takes you all around the world and gives you a view of the snowman you would never imagine. You're never going to look at the snowman the same way again because everyone's doing all this different stuff now with it. But I spent like 7 years traveling around the world, and it really was like a Da Vinci Code movie experience. I was flying around and taking planes and catching boats and going from one place to the other place, piecing together the clues to try to, it was like a holy grail of who made the first snowman. And there were clues. There was stuff to learn. It was just amazing what I found out.
7 years is an awful lot of time, but this wasn't an idle pursuit.
The snowman, when you make the snowman, you're making a depiction of man. It represents something. And the snowman could be just a man, but it also could represent other things. When there was the miracle of 1511, miracle of 1511 was like the Woodstock of the Middle Ages. There was a time in which snowman making was so popular and such an activity that it was a common thing to do for couples to stroll the streets of a town as it got later to enjoy the snow scenes that were created on street corners. And these scenes could be graphic and sexual content. They could be politically charged scenes in which the snowman represented, let's say, government people or members of the church. Because, I mean, people were fighting constantly with class and with government. They were fighting constantly with their church. And they were also wrestling with these concepts that they couldn't quite understand at a time. We're talking now, you know, 14th and 15th century. People did not have reading glasses just yet. Books were not readily available. And people had the sexual revolution in their own right. They didn't quite understand these urges. They couldn't understand the Black Plague, which was taking away so many hundreds of thousands of people. They didn't quite understand religion and the concepts that they were being forced on them. And the religious, these churches were powerful. So this was a form of government too. And so people were expressing themselves in the same way that people would express themselves in music and something. People could make snowmen and express themselves that way. Because, I mean, you did not have people writing. And there was no newspapers except for, I mean, you had journals and chronicles that were given out in town squares. But it was sort of limited. So snowmen actually facilitated people to have political commentary in that form. And if you think about it, it was sort of like free art supplies dropped from the sky in front of their doorsteps to be able to pursue this art. I mean, and I try to make the argument in my book, the new book, that snowman making was an early form of folk art. I try to go back and try to trace that this is an early form of man making art. And the way I did this was I did collect this dream team of experts so I could sort of, you know, collaborate on this, try to validate my theories that man in prehistoric time was not just making cave paintings and art out of stone, but art out of sticks, wood, mud, as well as snow. And the reason why we don't see it is because it wasn't as protected as those cave paintings deep in these caves. So the deeper you go in the caves, the more preserved it was. And I mean, people just assume that that's the form of art. It just happens to be just the tip of the iceberg. Man loved art because it's been proven by scientists that man did have an ability to be playful. And he did this because they're able to test that the hand paintings that were done not just by adults, but they were done by children. And the fact that children were making artwork sort of substantiates that fact, that playfulness plays a role in art. And it does today. Right now, I try to hone my craft of being funny through different people who are far funnier than I will ever be, but people who I can learn from. An example is John Cleese of Monty Python. He speaks around the country about the role of playfulness to being creative and how to be funny when you allow your brain to be playful. And he tries to teach business people to be better at their work and their business because playfulness can help them be creative. And there's a place for being creative in everyone's job. He tried to explain the importance of being creative, even in jobs you wouldn't think there's a place for that. But he tried to explain that. And that's why I try to explain that everyone can be benefited from this.
And the idea of play is one that frees us from the notion of utility, doesn't it? We're not necessarily goal-driven and therefore limited by what our vision is of a goal, an end. We're in the process and enjoying it too, right?
That's right. And you made me think of another way it helps is that it blocks out distractions. You are turning off some of the stresses and things and goes back again to releasing the tension. What you're doing is you're able to use the far reaches of your brain and you're saying to yourself, you're letting another part of your brain speak, which is why some people get their best ideas in the shower or someplace else. because you're not able to answer the phone and you can't hear your wife and you can't, for some reason, you're turning off things and you're reaching to other parts in your brain.
When you talk about the cave experience, you also talk and explore in the course of the book the many cultures around the world having experience with snow people. And you go back to the Tao. You go back to China and the references that it's okay to make images, not just on paper, but in snow.
Yeah, that was one way I could prove that snowman making goes back to the 7th and 6th century, because I found papers from northern China that stated that people can make the religious Buddha out of snow if they wish, and they were given permission to. But it was worded in such a way that it was done. Now, I didn't have absolute proof of an exact example because they all melted. And my earliest hard evidence of a snowman goes back to 1380. But these writings from the 7th century prove that man was making images out of snow. And then to go back to the prehistoric times, I went to the leading archaeologists in the world, people like Nigel Spivey, who is the creator of How Art Changed the World, a wonderful PBS special series that makes the connections of how art plays a role in the advancement of man and all the different technical advancements, which I also touch on my own way. I'm not quite as elegant as the scientists. So my goofy way of explaining that portion was to call the snowman a frozen Forrest Gump. And the Forrest Gump aspect being that he was the snowman who was right there at the forefront of some of these advancements. Yesterday, I had the privilege of showing an early still from a silent movie that starred a snowman. And the reason why I got that was actually the Museum of Modern Art. They cooperated with me and let me into their archives, which people don't realize the largest archive of movies exists in our region. It's in Wayne County. And I had my friend Artie Warehound. It's a very unusual name. I'm sorry if I'm butchering it up. He was the manager of the film archives, and he allowed me access to go to these vaults, which contain all the classic movies. I mean, this is like, if anybody who's a fan of TCM, the Turner Classic Movies, this is where a lot of the movies from all the classics are all stored there, and the earliest movies. So that's one example. Another example would be that the very first photographs, which date back to the 1840s, and these were from Scotland, and by a pioneer in photography, a woman named Mary Dillwyn, and she was in the family that sort of invented photography, and this goes back to the 1840s. There's some examples of some earlier shots, but this is kind of known as like the first dozen photographs, and two of these 12 pictures contain a snowman, and sure enough, here he goes. He pops up again, and the same is true for magazines and postcards. Because he's an image that's easy to depict, and he's such an iconic image.
And what about the sense that you've developed then that this is both high art? Wallace Stevens is writing poems about the snowman, and yet it's so rich an image that it can talk to us on so many levels.
Right. That's a good way, that's a good spin on it you put on it. One could also see it as that became low art because of the dumbing down of people, where we took this image that was once made by Michelangelo and some great artists throughout time. And now when the Frosty the Snowman animated series came out, we all sort of put it into a category of kid stuff. And that's something that's happened over the last century. You go back 100 years, it was more of an adult activity. And it is a very universal thing. The thing is that countries all around the world know what a snowman is. They have different forms of it. Like if you go to China and Japan, they have a two-ball snowman instead of three-ball. But aside from religious figures, it is one of the most recognizable icons. And it's appeared in more magazine covers and things and been used over and over in so many ways that it's one of those things that do unite us to other languages and things like that. It has a crossover. And you're right, it does cross over fine art as well as it's still being created by some of our top contemporary artists who use it as a form in their installations and their paintings and everything.
What about the whole gender issue? Because it's so in our news today. What about the snowman?
You're right. I keep on saying that it should be the snow person. And I will state that it's a snow woman who holds the world's record for the world's largest snowman. That's in Bethel, Maine. It was created a few years ago. It is 13 stories high. Before that, it was a man that was the largest snowman. And so we prove here again how women got their day in the sun. Although when we talk about snowmen, you don't want to say your day in the sun. But, you know, the gender thing is, I guess it's a little less important to me than one of the other issues, which is global warming. Global warming is really an example of like how the snowman could be sort of a poster boy in the same way that, I guess, like the duck-billed platypus was when everybody was more conscious about endangered species in the 1980s, which was kind of taking the back burner right now. It's a little bit in our rearview mirror.
Of course we know, and we've heard it in so many different ways, gather ye rosebuds while ye may, and all of the poetry and writings over the years about the ephemerality of life. And of course, in Japan, it's the cherry blossom and all of that. But the snowman is certainly representative of that sense and notion we have of the passing of life. It's going to meet its end, and that's something that we all have to face. We're all going to meet our end at some point.
Oh, my goodness. Where am I going to go from there? You're right. Oh, my goodness. That makes it really... Well, let's put in a more happy spin on that, because think about mortality is a little bit... You're right. It's right in your face. But on the other hand, it's an opportunity for anybody to make artwork that's not more public than your front yard. I mean, think of it this way. How often in your life are you making a life-size figure, a sculpture? Not everyone gets a chance to do that in their lifetime. So if that's on your bucket list, you can add that to your bucket list. And also, it's funny. It's funny how people are willing to do that and be judged. You're making artwork that everyone could see. Maybe I thought of it a long time ago, but I'm just being reminded of how it's a unique experience when you go outside. And of course, you're getting pulled away finally from those silly iPhones and stuff, because you can't be texting and wearing mittens and making snowballs at the same time. So it's great for the kids. I was spending the summer, I spent some time with my nephews who I love. And the whole point was to get them to do things that they wouldn't normally do and be more, you know, tactile, get them out to do things. They did things that they never done before, like start a barbecue and cook and things like this. And it's like, you kids never did this before? It's because kids were so used to their Xbox and their texting and stuff like that.
Your nephews might like this picture.
Erica's actually opened the book up right now in front of me as we're talking, and there's one example of the snowman exploding, and that's a holiday in Switzerland. They each year, what they do is they make a stuffed snowman, a very flammable dynamite and wood, and put it on this big mountain, and the whole town comes around to watch it burn and explode. And based on how long it takes for the snowman to disappear, that's how they determine how many more days of winter they have left before spring. And this goes back, actually, a tradition that goes back 100 years. Everyone's imagining the typical photographs, but I have unusual photographs. I try to get my hands on very rare incidences. And you'll have to go to the bookstore right away. You could see some of the photographs on the website to get a taste of what we're talking about.
Tell us about the particulars, who published it, and it's just out, and all of
that. Yeah, it's published by Globe. And I went with this mid-sized publisher because I really, really support what they're doing. The books that they produce are all about growth and finding yourself and books that better yourself. And so I'm really proud to be a part of their family for this project. And they did such a beautiful job. The book is really just a piece of artwork in itself. At the first week, it sold out. So I know that people are out there enjoying it. That makes me feel like I'm really reaching. People are really hearing what I was hoping to accomplish.
Bob Eckstein, who is known as the world's leading snowman expert. He is an award-winning writer, cartoonist, illustrator, New York Times bestseller. He has his cartoons shown in The New Yorker and in many special places. And this was a conversation with him
when the Illustrated History of the Snowman was released. And as you heard him say, it sold out right away, and it went into its second run, and I'm sure it's into many runs since then. If you'd like more information about Bob Eckstein and his Illustrated History of the Snowman, which has been issued by Globe Pequot, then you can check Bob's website, and that is bobeckstein.com. BobEckstein.com, ECKSTEIN.com. Bob Eckstein is someone who is bi-regional. He spends a good deal of his time at his home in Wayne County and also in New York City. And again, it is the Illustrated History of the Snowman by Bob Eckstein, issued by Globe Pequot. And for more information, bobeckstein.com, bobeckstein.com.